श्रीला गुरुदेव की जय, श्रीमन महाप्रभु की जय, श्री श्री सद्गुरु गौरांग की जय, श्री हरि नाम संकीर्तन की जय, श्री गुंदीचा मार्जन लीला की जय, गौर भक्त वृंद की जय, गौर प्रेमानंद हरि हरि ओम। सो pranam to all of you, thanks so much for coming, and good evening, welcome. Thank you so much, Vrigupat Saragrahi, for hosting us, Sadbhuj Mahaprabhu, for hosting Vrigupat and Saragrahi, and all of us by extension. So, today we are celebrating Gundicha Marjan Lila. We are entering into the fold of Sri Jagannath, if you will, and all a series of celebrations connected to this unique deity of Krishna that we find mostly in Jagannath Puri. Tomorrow we are celebrating Rath Yatra, or the festival of chariots. And one day before Rath Yatra, always we are celebrating Gundicha Marjan Lila, which means the pastime of the cleansing of the Gundicha temple. So this is one of these few festivals or pastimes that are included in our calendar. I don't know, maybe probably because, of course, you always know which day was the festival because it's just one day before Rath Yatra, because there are so many other lilas that Mahaprabhu performed with his associate that are not necessarily part of the calendar, not because they are not important, but maybe probably because just it is not known which was the day on which they were performed. In connection to Gundicha Marjan, you always know it's one day before Rath Yatra, so there's no opportunity for failure there. So this is a very interesting lila. Lots of, interpretive reading to be performed in this connection. Lots of symbology that we are to draw from what's taking place in the outside of the lila, if you will. I mean, there's in one sense no outside of the lila, but at the same time there are many layers of meaning, of purpose. Every time Bhagavan, Krishna, Mahaprabhu, his associates are doing anything, we should know for sure there are simultaneous, multi-dimensional levels of purpose at the same time. That's the nature of God. You know, he can accomplish many things at the same time by doing one single thing. Apparently one single thing, but so many things have been accomplished in so many directions. So, as we will continue speaking also tomorrow, Gundicha is one temple that, for those who have been able to visit Jagannath Puri, is on one side of the main road, Grand Road, as it is called sometimes in Jagannath Puri. So, in the beginning of that main road, you have Sri Mandir, or the temple where Sri Jagannath resides, and on the other extreme, you have Gundicha Mandir. And Rath Yatra basically means the chariots, the three chariots, Jagannath, Baladev, Subhadra, moving from Rath Yatra, from Sri Mandir to Gundicha Mandir. That's some, how much, maybe 4 kilometers, how much the distance. It takes some time walking, and it takes more time in Rath Yatra because sometimes Jagannath wants to move, sometimes he doesn't, or different other, of course, consideration. So, the general idea of the Gundicha Marjan Lila, just for you to have, keep that in mind, and then we will go into the details of this particular episode. And it's tied with the meaning of Rath Yatra. The whole idea of Rath Yatra is like going to Vrindavan, if you will. We are in Puri, but actually we are going to Vrindavan. That's the goal of the Gaudiya Sampradaya, to enter Vrindavan. And to enter Vrindavan, as it will be clear, hopefully, by this Gundicha Lila, go to Vrindavan means to make our hearts Vrindavan. This is not just, I got my ticket and I am Vrindavan or something like that. Even if you arrive there physically, you have to ask, where am I mentally, internally, and then you will know where you are, basically. Like when Srila Rupa Goswami says, Mathura Vas. Ideally, you should reside physically in Vrindavan. And And Jiva Goswami say, well, if that's not possible, at least you should reside there mentally. Like implying, if you are physically there, needless to say, the idea is that you were there mentally as well. If you cannot be there physically, okay, try to be mentally. But whether you are there physically or not, ideally mentally you have to be there. Internally you have to recreate the atmosphere, the environment, the mood of the dham, of the sacred abode. So this Gundicha Marjan Lila, as we will see, Rath Yatra means the chariots are going from Kurukshetra or from Dwarka, depending how you like to conceive Puri. We will speak about that tomorrow. But going to Vrindavan. You can see Jagannath Mandir as Kurukshetra, you can see Jagannath Mandir as Dwarka, but Gundicha is Vrindavan, that's for sure. So the converging point of the journey is Vrindavan. But of course, for Jagannath to go to Vrindavan, for Krishna to enter Vrindavan and reside there, and for us to be there, we have to make our hearts Vrindavan. So this Gundicha Marjan Lila speaks a lot about these preliminary actions to prepare the ground, the foundation, for that to happen. For us to celebrate Rath Yatra in the most substantial way, in a way that actually Jagannath feels tempted to enter into our hearts. Because again, externally we are pulling the carts, externally the chariot are moving to a particular place, but all of these external dynamics should be understood as, should take place internally as well. In some way, as the car is moving, something should be moving inside my heart. If my heart is not being moved, maybe I moved the car from one extreme to the other, but if nothing is being moved here, it was not so much purpose in the external moving, if you will. So the idea is clean your hearts, prepare your heart for the descent of divine love that will make Vrindavan, will make your consciousness Vrindavan. Basically, this is the symbology of Gundicha Marjan. Gundicha means, again, the temple that represents Vrindavan. And we will see in today's Lila how Mahaprabhu and his associates are totally dedicated to cleaning that temple. This doesn't mean that Vrindavan in itself needs to be cleansed. In an external level, it needs a lot. But in an internal sense, Vrindavan is the cleansing place for excellence. But the point is, you need to clean your heart so it becomes Vrindavan. So it reflects this divine prem that Vrindavan is. And the only place in which Krishna resides is there, basically, for us Gaudiyas. That's his, as my Guru Maharaj likes to say, in that heart where there is divine love, in that heart you will find Krishna more present than anywhere else. Krishna is most present next to prem. So some words about, let's share some words about this temple, the cleaning of the Gundicha temple. To begin with, the name Gundicha is basically the name of the wife of Indradyumna Maharaj, to whom this deity of Jagannath revealed in ancient times. And interestingly, it is said that this is the first place, actually the original place where Jagannath appeared to Indradyumna Maharaj. So interestingly, Jagannath originally appeared not where he is now, but in a place that represents Vrindavan. So that's an interesting point. Saragrahi is confirming, given the authoritative background. Her notebook is supporting my statements. So, what we will see, among many other things, in this particular Lila, is Mahaprabhu, Sri Chaitanya Dev. We already know that Sri Chaitanya Dev, a sannyasi in particular, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, he's acharya. He's Krishna, he's acharya lila. So acharya means he who is teaching by example. Also by precept, but he's walking the talk so much that sometimes he doesn't need to say almost anything because his example speaks so much louder than precept. So in this particular Lila, of course many others, but this is one of those in which you will see Mahaprabhu as the acharya par excellence, like he himself showing what to do and teaching others and giving the example to others about how to conduct in the particular task. So he will ask his followers, okay, let's clean Gundicha, but he will clean Gundicha better than anyone else. It's not that, okay, let's clean Gundicha, I'll go to have some some ice cream or something in the Grand Road. I mean, I don't think there was ice cream at that time, but some burfi or some sweet, whatever. And you clean the whole thing and let me know when you're finished. No, he was the main one leading the cleaning procession, if you will. No? So, as my Guru Maharaj likes to say, no, if you are being an acharya means that you are ready to do those things that you are requesting others to do. Now, for some reason, you may be needing to do something, and you may need to ask Vrigupada, please, can you help me with this? Because I have to do this. But if Vrigupada says no, he won't say that, but let's go to them. For some exceptional reasons, he may not be able to say, no, I cannot do that. So the person who requested him to do that should be willing to do that oneself. It's not that I'm asking you to do something that I'm not willing to do. So that's part of the integrity of the acharya, basically. So again, this is the preparation, the one day before Rath Yatra. In the context in which this is described in Chaitanya Charitamrita, which, if I'm not mistaken, is where we will find this Gundicha Marjan Lila in more detail than any other hagiography, if that's described at all in any other hagiography that comes to my memory. Mahaprabhu has returned from his South Indian pilgrimage after 2 years of being absent from Puri. You can imagine the level, again, we have to give some context, the level of separation from the inhabitants. He just arrived there. He didn't stay that long in Puri, but he converted Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, a few more. The whole city was totally maddened with love of God, and he left. And he left and he returned after 2 years. And there comes the conversion of, in this context will come the conversion of Prataparudra Maharaj, the king of Puri, and so on. So different devotees coming from different places, Bengal, other areas, to join Mahaprabhu, like every Chaturmasya, 4 months with him. And we are just getting closer and closer to Rath Yatra per se. So Gundicha Marjan Lila is about to come. So Mahaprabhu is asking Kasi Mishra, and he calls this, how do you say, like the temple president in the area and so on. They ask them and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, who is taken as a senior for Mahaprabhu, please give me permission to engage in the cleansing of Gundicha Marjan. He's asking that one day before, like yesterday, if you will. Can I clean Gundicha Marjan with my companions? So everyone gives permission, blessing for that. So interestingly, Mahaprabhu starts to get all the particular paraphernalia for that to happen. And interestingly, before starting the cleansing of the temple, that you may consider that's not the highest engagement, if you will, to clean. But Mahaprabhu start to decorate his devotees. He started to put sandalwood paste. He started to garland all of them. Before passing the broom and other items, seems that Bhrigupada is tempted to recreate a little bit there. Okay, we have to make this more interactive.
Yes.
Okay, thank you so much. So somehow we will try to travel. This is important to travel in time and space and try to inhabit all this narration. So Bhrigupada has felt some inspiration and will extend some Udipana. So for those of you online who are wondering what's that weird noise in the background, our dream Bhrigupada Prabhu is grinding sandalwood to make sandalwood paste and to decorate all the sadakas. No? We'll bring some brooms now very soon also. We have kept the house as dirty as possible, so after the class, let's see who learned the lesson. And we will decorate all of you with some sandalwood paste. Even the ones online, let's see how you have in meditation received the decoration here. So Mahaprabhu started to decorate his associates. Before giving them the broom, you say? Yeah, the broom, the bucket with water and all this stuff. First he gave chandan, first he gave mala, no? Garland, sandalwood paste, and so on. Before turning to the Gundicha margin, for the cleaning of Gundicha. So what's the meaning of this also? No? We will stop at certain points of the description of the Lila, trying to make sure, to make sense of what's the meaning of that. So the idea of Mahaprabhu doing this is what you are about to perform, he's telling to his devotees, and this is the same thing that Sri Guru is telling to his students. You are about to clean your heart. You are about to engage in bhajan kriya and anarthani vritti. You are about to embrace sadhana bhakti with the purpose of preparing your heart for bhava bhakti, prem bhakti to descend, for Vrindavan to manifest. So that's a heroic task, basically. Sometimes people like Joseph Campbell and others will speak about the hero's journey. Archana Siddhi also. He will speak about the beauty and messiness of the sadhaka's journey. So which is a heroic one, basically. Okay. Jaho. Jai. Shriman Mahaprabhu ki jai. So why is Mahaprabhu decorating his devotees, like Bhrigupada is doing at this precise moment? He's telling to them, what you are about to do is glorious. You are about to enter into this adventure of cleansing your heart. That requires courage. That requires integrity. That requires so much dignities in that task. As messy as it can be, as up and down as it can be. So he's indicating that you are about to engage in anarthani vritti, in cleaning your heart from all impurities, from all layers of ulterior motives. That's glorious. All of you have been properly decorated now. Sorry, we don't have time as he did for making 15 garlands in one moment. So we have to develop that yoga siddhi yet. But mentally, Bhrigupada is garlanding all of you. So please receive that mentally, all of you as well. So Mahaprabhu is making this point. You are about to engage in anarthani vritti. You are practicing bhakti with an awareness of the necessity of the moment, which is I cannot just aspire in a naive way to be in Golok Vrindavan in one weekend, but I need to deal with so many non-integrated complexity in my life that I need to learn how to integrate, to become a whole practitioner, a balanced human being, on which foundation I can develop my, as my Guru Maharaj will say, vertical devotional project. So what's the meaning of anarthani vritti? We have to stop there for a while to really understand the symbology of this Gundicha Marjan Lila. So anartha, artha means value, basically we could say wealth or value. So anartha means to assign false value to reality, basically. That's an anartha makes you assign false value to something that has some other type of value, but you are imposing a false sense of value in the environment, and you conduct your life according to that sense of value that you are projecting, which is based on some form of prejudice. Or if we take art as purpose, also an art means a false sense of purpose that is conducting your life. And nibriti, of course, means like getting rid of a false sense of value, in other words, acquiring real value. Artha, paramartha, the supreme wealth, the supreme gift. And as I like to say, to get rid of false senses of value and purpose doesn't mean like to engage in some form of evasive practice. No, this is bad, and just take the carpet and pull everything behind the carpet. I'm engaging in anarthani vritti now. Like if you will clean the house, I hope you don't just put all the dirt below the carpet. No? Just in case, do not look what's going on there. Maybe one dragon is there or something, some arm will come or something. But the point is, imagine if Bhrigupada is caught doing that. Infraganti, you say also? And Saragai say, what are you doing? Bhrigupada says, I'm cleaning the house. And she says, Dad, you're not cleaning the house. You're concentrating all the dirt in one hidden spot of the house. So that remains in the house. Nobody can see it, but it's in the house. And it's so concentrated that even in time it may create some monster, because it's so much in one same place, you know, tumor or something, you know, some whatever. So we are not about evasive mechanisms, not like, oh no, I have to deal with my anartha, just put everything below the carpet and nobody will notice that. You put a nice picture in your social media profile and life goes on. That's not the idea. But how to integrate whatever is causing some trouble means that's something that is begging for further integration. How I can use that particular energy or situation or tendency, how I can dovetail and re-center that in connection to the Absolute. Because if we conceive anartha nivritti just as getting rid of stuff, no, that I don't want to see, and not even working on that stuff before getting rid of that, we may just be again in a mood of, I want to stop having this as soon as possible. But you are not learning anything from that, and you may be just evasive. So transcendence doesn't mean evasion. Transcendence means integration, acknowledgement. As much as we can see, acknowledging what's there in the horizon, as cloudy as it may be in the present moment, no problem. If you acknowledge where you are, as my Guru Maharaj likes to say, and where you want to be, the two of them are equally important. I want to be here. This is the goal I want to attain. Okay, great, nice. Idyllic, bucolic Rajadham. Where you are now? Maybe not so bucolic. More closer to Bukowski, more than bucolic. Because keep, and not Brajadam, not any form of Dham maybe yet, but I want to be in Brajadam, and I have received some knocking on the door to open that and get that grace. So we want to be human. Entering Vrindavan means to keep our humanity intact, and even that to maximize and upgrade our humanity, to divinize humanity. So in the name of cleaning our heart, be careful of stop being human. Because we may be so much like in a mechanical battle to get rid of bad stuff, but you may lose your humanity in the context of that. No? So anartha nivritti has nothing to do with that. Anartha nivritti means preparing the ground for the divine humanism that we find in Vrindavan. To dovetail your humanity in the context of devotional culture. Anartha nivritti is a very sensitive engagement, very, very human, actually. It should be, at least. If not, there's no nivritti at all. You're just keeping, again, you're an artist in a more hidden way, more condensed way, so you are just making the whole sickness worse. So, as Vaishnavas, we are, as I like always to say, we are not so much after being devotional superheroes, but devotional human beings. At least to begin with, you want to be a superhero, first become a human being in the context of bhakti. It's not about being like totally transcendental and nothing is affecting me. Am I totally invulnerable and here I am? Doesn't work like that. So we need to acknowledge our present condition, as embarrassing as that may be, without over-identifying with that, of course. We are not that, but the cloudy day is there. You cannot deny the cloud. You know that the sun is beyond that, and so on. But you have to do something with that cloud. So we may have some limited experiences yet, as we say today in the morning. Sometimes we need to be pushed to the limits of to the reach of our limitations, not to get depressed or over-identified, but just to know the limits of that. So we need to acknowledge the different parts of the battlefield, if you will, physical, mental, intellectual, which are the reach and limitations of that. And in the context of all of that, and despite all of that, so much grace is coming. I remember some years ago, I was in North Carolina, and Gopal Nandini, the wife of Krishna Chaitanya in North Carolina, she works in one company that they make like giant puppets. I know they're called puppets because they are so great that it's not that you're moving there with your hand or anything. They are like bigger than this room. So it's a big project. And just happened that I was visiting them and she was performing with their group one day. So she told me if I would like to go. And we went with the devotees. But before their performance, there was like a, how do you say in English? When a band is playing, the main band is playing, but some other bands come before. Supporting act?
Supporting.
Something like
yeah.
that? Okay. So there was one supporting act. It was a couple that were making more basically music. It was with lots of sarcasm and conscious content, but with lots of sarcasm and irony. And the name of the band was Charming Disaster. And I don't know why, but I the main thing that I recalled from the whole event was that, because I couldn't avoid relating that, okay, that's us as sadhakas, Charming Disaster. Now, we are still a disaster in one sense, at least I am speaking for myself, but charming, because there is so much grace, so much beauty that has come to our lives, and somehow we are opening, trying to accept that, and that's creating so many wonderful things in our life that we cannot deny. Still, there may be disaster, but you cannot deny the charming side of the equation, and in time, the charm will be the victorious, if you will. No, as I like to say, no matter how much disastrous you are, the charm of Krishna, Guru, and Vaishnava will always triumph in the scale, if you will. No matter if you bring to me in a play with all your anartas put together in the most condensed form, they may weigh like 1 ton or more. Maharaj, look, all the disaster I am. If I say, okay, let's see how much mercy Mahaprabhu has come to your door. Let's put on that the other side of the scale. Automatically, we'll go like, boom. And on that tone of an artist, it's like, disappearing, who knows where. So it's important to keep that in mind. No? As disaster as that may be, charm is there. And the real glory of all this is, I'm acknowledging that, I'm not identifying with that disaster, but I'm working on that. And I'm learning even from those so-called enemies. My Guru Maharaj once, he was asked, how will you define anarthani vritti? And he'll say, it means put your enemies on the altar, he'll say. Like if you want to see anarthas as enemies, actually sometimes our acharyas have graphically depicted them, a tigress or a mad woman and this and that, and lust, greed and so on. But ultimately, they are not other people who is inside of you that they are to blame and we can play the victim. Oh, this tigress is killing me so much, poor me. I mean, you are feeding the monster. Like I like to say, if you are eating, I have close experience of this these days. If you eat something that kills your stomach and you cannot say, oh, those, whatever. Whatever, that particular preparation is killing me. Or my stomach is killing me. No, the reality is you are killing your stomach by giving who knows what thing. So similarly, our mind is like the stomach of the subtle psychic body. So if you feed that junk food, if you will, junk thoughts, junk impressions, junk prejudice, the mind will be killing you. But actually, it's because you are killing your mind. You are feeding that with so much nonsense. So then you are like, oh, like if someone else is there. Like there's some many voices took possession of you. But actually, it's just all the junk stuff. You have to take responsibility of your choice. Okay, I like junk food. Yeah, it's not something like that. So my point is, we have to take responsibility as long as those things are there. We have to learn from them. Even if we have to integrate them, to transcend them, we have to learn from them as well. If you want to see them as opponents, you have to learn from them. Like if you have to play, I don't know, a match of tennis with someone, you want to defeat that person, but somehow the qualities of that person will challenge you to become better. And somehow that person is helping you to become better, upgrade yourself. So anyhow, this is anarthani vritti. I'm going back just now to Gundicha Marjan Lila, but I just want to make clear the point. These brooms and water and buckets are all about this particular thing. And one more thing, anarthani vritti is, we could say, is all about creativity. Why? You have to be creative in Anartha Nivritti, because Anartha Nivritti means you have to turn your worst enemy into your best friend. That's what Krishna says in the Gita. You have to turn bandhurat matmanastasya janatmai vatmanajita anatmanastu satrutvet bharti tatmaiva satrubat. So, mind out of control, worst enemy. Mind under control, best friend. So, imagine, that's a potential. Imagine if I ask you, who is your worst enemy? And still we may see some enemy outside of us. So we'll say, no, that guy outside of my house, he's always screaming at me. I'm playing trumpet at 3 a.m. when I want to sleep and all these type of things. Some internal joke here. And I can say, okay, now the challenge is that guy that you feel is the worst possible enemy, he has to turn into your best friend ever. So it's like, oh my gosh. Not only he has to be, you have to keep make peace, but the best friend possible. That's a challenge. But it's not impossible. It's difficult, as I like to say, but it's not impossible. And difficult is strike the middle point between easy and impossible. Those are the unwanted, undesirable extremes. Easy, boring, no, and impossible, discouraging. But difficult, oh wow, that's the middle point. Sometimes we take difficult as at extreme. Oh, it's difficult. So what do you want? Easy? After 2 minutes, you are desperate, asking for some difficulty, because it's so boring. So we have to... Anartha has the potential to become Artha and Paramartha. So it's all about creativity. How do I deal with this present so-called enemies and behave in such a way, myself behave in such a way, friendly way, that they start to behave as friends as well. So that takes, again, creativity, that takes responsibility. And takes also awareness of who we are, again, where we are, adhikar. The idea of adhikar is not some yarding stick, you say?
Yardstick.
Yardstick that you go on life measuring everyone. What's your adhikar? What's your adhikar? But just, I would say, a sincere acknowledgement of where I am at present so I know how to proceed. So I don't acting above where I am, below where I am, so I can be where I am. Sveshvedikari janishta saguna parikirtita, says the Bhagavatam. To know where you are, to know your adhikar, that's real virtue, that's real beauty. So that's also what we could say Mahaprabhu is decorating his devotees. Because he's saying, you are about to engage in Anartha Nivritti, which implies you have to be realistic about yourself, where you are and how to deal with where you are. And that's real beauty. To have the courage and the honesty to say, okay, I'm here, but I want to be here, and I'm willing to do what I need to be from here to here. Oh, that's real beauty. So that deserves. Externally, he's beautifying them to show, okay, the internal beauty of treading that path. So that said, Mahaprabhu and his associates turn to Gundicha Marjan, armed with chandan, mala, broom, some, how do you say, how did Narasingha want to say? Smapanam, mopanam, how? Scravanam, mapanam. To engage in these alternative angas of bhakti. Another variety of Shravan and Kirtan, if you will. That's a nice compliment. That's what really was really happening when Shravan and Kirtan. So it is said that they go to the Gundicha Marjan, to the Gundicha temple, and they start to clean the whole temple. Different areas, Mahaprabhu is distributing the areas, the cleaning items, and Mahaprabhu himself start to clean the temple, the Sancto Sanctorum, as they say sometimes in Latin, where Jagannath Dev himself is seated. He goes to the Simhasana there, and he starts to clean it. All the different parts, to begin with brooms. First of all, first layer of cleaning. Again, all this has the parallel with inner cleaning. It's not just one layer. I'm done. You pass the broom as quick as you can. I'm done, Saragrahi, I clean the house. Hopefully, Brigupada doesn't do that. Like after half an hour, we'll say, the whole house is finished or something. And Mahaprabhu starts again, he's Acharya, he's teaching others through his example, and he said that he himself is cleaning Jagannath's Simhasana with his own cloth. No? Like implying that, I mean, he's not even using a broom, no? Like something that is his very own paraphernalia, if you, his own cloth, he's cleaning that. No? Like in a very intimate way. No? Like also implying this is glorious. No? Because if you will clean generally you and use your cloth, you may say you are ruining your cloth by using it for cleaning, for dust. But Mahaprabhu is implying, but this is not, I'm not ruining my cloth. I mean, this is the real purpose of using cloth. I can use that to clean, to take the dust, representing again all that's taking place inside. So there's not, externally may seem there's more dust, but external, internal means I'm getting rid of that. So it is said that Mahaprabhu will clean and clean very joyfully, always chanting the name of Krishna. As we will see, that's mostly the only narrative in the whole Gundicha Marjan Lila. They describe what they do, but what they say is Harinam, Harinam, over and over and over and over again. So it is said that Mahaprabhu's body and all the rest was covered by dust. So they received this unique abhishek, if you will. They were and they will seeing themselves especially beautiful. Again, the Krishna Das Kaviraj say he was especially beautiful, covered with all the dust. Like implying again, when you clean your heart, the dust starts to come, and you may be covered by that, if you will. And it may seem like, oh, you are so dirty. But actually, if that's in the context of cleaning your heart, it's, oh, you are especially beautiful today. On a different note, but when Krishna is returning every day from his Goshta Lila, and he's covered by the dust of Vrindavan, and all the acharyas say, oh, he's especially beautiful at that moment. He's totally covered by dust. So here Mahaprabhu is showing another variety of that type of abhishek. No? Like, you are covered by dust, but everything looks beautiful. Like if you start to clean a room, and the room was never cleansed for 10 years or something, the dirt is so much established that you feel there's no dirt. It has become so much part of the atoms of the room that it seems like, wow, everything seems with a layer of gray, but it seems that it's natural. It's like a part of the constitution of the room. Of course, you move the broom a little bit and it's like, and you say, oh, why I did that? No? It's a disaster. I'm a mess. And you may think, oh, it was better before moving the broom. Everything was just No? But of course, I will go to the chair and say, no, that's hypocrisy. That seemed nice, but it was just apparent situation. It was not real. Reality was dirt was everywhere, taking control of the whole room. So now you are trying to deal with that, and yeah, you are a disaster. But at the very end of the cleansing, you will be able to appreciate, oh, there was red there, yellow there, green there. It's not everything was gray. No. Everything is multicolored. You are totally gray now. It's okay. You look at yourself, oh, you are a disaster on one level, but another level you feel, ah, oh, so much joy. You are appreciating reality as it is, different colors of reality, if you will. So similarly, Mahaprabhu will clean this way. Krishna Das Kaviraj will say sometimes he will cleanse with his own tears, sometimes bucket of water was not required, just the materials came organically through his different senses. So he will just cry in ecstasy chanting Harinam, and that was the required water for cleaning here and there. So it is said that Mahaprabhu made a big pile of dirt after cleaning and cleaning and cleaning. And he took that with his cloth. And he threw that outside of the temple. So that's another symbology there. No? Again, you clean, you make the whole pile. What will you do now with the pile? It's not like, okay, let's redistribute that in different parts of the house. Or let's take the carpet and make a hole in the ground and just put there and put. But you have to take that outside so it does not return. So the same way as sadhakas, we practice and try to clean our heart from certain anarthas, we should be careful not to behave in such a way that we are inviting those anarthas to return to our heart. Or what to speak of acquiring new anarthas, that can happen. In the name of bhakti, that's what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur calls bhakti-yuta anartha. He says, maybe you begin the process of bhakti and you have, I don't know, lust, greed, anger, envy, whatever, on some degree. You start practicing, and your heart starts to get cleansed from all those things. You clean yourself so nicely that people start to feel inspired with you. So you start to have followers, you start to have fame, name, you start to have knowledge. Some money is coming as a consequence of all that. All those things you didn't have before. No. When you joined, you didn't have fame, name, position, money, knowledge. You have other anarthas, so you got rid of those anarthas, but now some byproducts are coming as a result of bhakti, which are okay, but the problem is how you relate to them. Because you may get attached to them, and you are bringing the dirt back in a new form, which may be even a more subtle form, because it seems that it's Bhakti Devi's mercy. I'm Jukta Vairagya Prabhu. Everything can be engaged in service of Krishna, yes, but you have to know, again, adhikar, you have to know how much capacity do you have for that. So, in this way, Mahaprabhu was giving this example. First of all, his pile was bigger than the rest, so he was the leader telling others what to do, but he was doing that himself better than all of them put together, basically. He was really leading by example, and when he took the pile, he took it quite far away. So, like implying, this is a permanent situation. It's not that I'm getting cleansed so I can incorporate new dirt, and the process is always the same. Some old dirt is going out, but the new dirt is coming, and there's always some dirt, updated dirt, present there or something. That's not the idea. So the first layer of cleansing was there, so you can think, okay, time to rest, finish, let's go to prepare for Athi. After Mahaprabhu said, no. Now let's go and clean the whole thing again. Because probably there's still dirt to find, subtle, more subtle one. And nobody complained. It's not like, oh, Mahaprabhu, don't be neurotic, it's too much, it's nice like that, it's enough. All of them understood, no, this has to be crystal clear, so Jagannath feels inspired to come here and take seat permanently. So Mahaprabhu said, let's try to clean again and try to pick the most subtle small particles of dust and grass or even sand. I mean, Jagannath Puri is close to the beach, so it's not easy to clean a place where you are living near the beach, no? I remember last year I stayed in Jagannath Puri for, how long? Like 40 days or something? And that was like two blocks from the beach. So every single day I will leave and return. It was a mess of how do you say? Sand. Everywhere. And you clean that next day, everywhere. No, because that's the nature of sand, no? And that's the nature of some anarthas in particular also. Okay, they are over. Let's see tomorrow. Here and there. So they start to clean everything again, trying to go deeper. So this is the same. Anartha Nibriti has to be performed. Again, not with neurosis. It's never enough, and for sure there must be so much. But just like, I want this to be as clean as possible. I'm trying to invite Krishna to the throne of my heart. I'm trying to make Mama Mandir, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur will say, make my heart a temple. I don't want to invite him to a dirty place. He needs the best possible place. I'm happy to have the chance of cleaning again and becoming more saragrahi, more a sense seeker, not trying to go more fine detail. So that's the dynamic with anartha nibriti. You may get rid of some gross anartha, but do not rest and think, okay, that's over. Maybe that's over for today. You deserve some rest. But tomorrow, Maybe a more subtle thing will be there, and a more subtle thing will be there, and a more subtle thing will be there, till you have transcended everything. But generally we'll go from gross to subtle. I mean, you have to expect that to happen. It will happen in that way. So anyhow, they cleanse for a second time. And Mahaprabhu was very happy to see the level of cleaning in the whole temple, to see the endeavor of his followers, to see how much awareness they had in this anartha nivritti. Of course, they are nitya parishad, they don't need any anartha nivritti, they are just performing this so we can derive this teaching. So I would say that anartha nivritti, it's not a practice unto itself. You do not do anartha nivritti. You engage in bhajan and kriya, in devotional practices. But anartha nivritti means you engage in bhakti with unawareness of which anarthas you have to deal with, as much as you can see. Of course, we cannot see the whole constellation, the whole anarthic constellation that we have, but what you can see, it's important that you have to try to be aware of that and work with that and gradually advance more and more. So anartha nivritti will be that, but engaging in bhajan kriya, while I'm trying to be aware as much as I can of which anarthas are taking place at the present moment. Raghunath Das Goswami, Manashik, Sharupa Goswami, Upadeshamrita, all of them, they begin their treatises trying to make this point. Try to do that, try to work under the shelter of the sadhu, who knows even sometimes better than us what we need in many cases. Our especially knows all that we can be. So that's very important, to keep the proximity to someone who knows. When we say the guru knows us better than we do, not necessarily means he knows in detail all your anarthas, he knows in detail what you are thinking, but he or she knows all that you can be. And that's enough for us. That's what we need him to know, if you will. He knows all that we can be, and he or she has the capacity of connecting that with that potential. So anyhow, after these two layers of broom is the brushing. Instrument.
Brushing.
Brooming?
Sweeping.
Sweeping. I want to... Brushing, you say?
Yeah, sweeping.
Okay, sweeping. Mahaprabhu now says, now bring water. Again, another layer of cleaning. No, two layers of sweeping, now bring water. So everyone brought like hundreds of buckets filled with water. And they put them all in front of Mahaprabhu. And he started himself. Taking again cloth, water, and just going even further detail. Even the, how do you say?
Roof?
Ceiling. The ceiling, floor, simhasana, everything in the room, Mahaprabhu will like. And then at one point they start to throw, because yeah, you cannot reach the ceiling just that easy, so they start to throw water to the ceiling. So you can imagine also, that created, I imagine, some type of festive dynamics as well. Some refreshing also, no? Because of so much cleaning and so on. So the water was on the walls, on the ceiling, on the floor, on everyone. Some self-generated abhishek for everyone. And the world was clean, cleansing. So Mahaprabhu continued cleaning the seat of Sri Jagannath. That may be too much of a recreation. For those of you who are not here with us online, there is some indication to throw here water to the ceiling, but maybe the online streaming may end up and the speaker may be electrocuted or something like that. So only because of you, so you can continue here, we won't do that. But mentally that's going on. So everyone was cleaning with water. Even some of them will go close to Mahaprabhu when he was absorbed in ecstasy cleaning, and they will throw some water without him noticing in his feet. And some other will like drink the charanamrita coming from the feet of Mahaprabhu. So again, it's not only about getting rid of anarthas, but receiving. In the context of using the water that you use to clean, that can transform also into divine Charanamrita as well. So at one point, Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami will say, so at this point, the minds of every devotee were as clean as the rooms were clean. So making clear this parallel. You are cleaning the outside room, but actually this represents the inside room. So, and it, I think, applies to all of us. If you live in a dirty house, it speaks about your mind as well, basically. You know? And you cannot just be in a totally dirty house and you, generally speaking at least, you'll be totally transcendental and undisturbed. So one thing is corresponding to the other. So this Gundicha Marjan Lila again is speaking about what sadhana bhakti is about. No? Kriti sadhya bhavet sadhya bhavasa sadhana vida nitya siddhasya bhavasya prakatyam hridi sadhyata. Which basically means engage your senses for the pleasure of the master of the senses, so you are preparing your heart for the descent of Nitya Siddha Bhava, for the descent of the eternal feelings residing in the hearts of the Brajavasis, the inhabitants of Vrindavan. So it's not that this is a very long, maybe technical point, so I won't into the detail, won't go there, but it's not that sadhana bhakti produces prem. Prema is not something produced or created. So it's Nitya, Nitya Siddha. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prem. Sadhya Kavunai. For more information, you can go to that book there. So, subliminal promotion there. But the point is, Nitya Siddha Krishna Prem means divine love for Krishna exists eternally in the Nitya Siddha. It's Nitya Siddha in the Nitya Siddhas. No, it's eternal existent in those who are eternally perfect. So, prema is not created. Prema is just descending. So what's the purpose of sadhana? To clean our chitta. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prem, Sadhya Kabunai, Shravanadi, Suddha Chitta, Karai, Udai. So the chitta is cleansed. Mahaprabhu will give the exact same analogy. Chitta Darpana Marjanam. You will cleanse the mirror of your chitta. So that eventually will prepare the ground for the descent of Krishna Prem. Wow. So anyhow, the devotees were singing, dancing. Hundreds of buckets with water were coming. Some of them were ecstatically bringing them, so they will crash with one another, and the buckets were made of clay, so they will break. So they had more to clean and more water to bring. And here comes the point when Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami will say, and whenever they needed something, the only thing they say was, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. But everyone will understand what they needed. If someone needed a bucket with water, they would say, Krishna, Krishna. And the other one would say, Krishna, Krishna. So, and they understood, I need a bucket of water. And the other one would say, I'm bringing it. But they just said, Krishna, Krishna. There was no need to use any other words. They were so much, fine-tuned. Aligned with the sense of purpose, that there was no need to use any other words to mean anything else, and also implying the name of Krishna includes every other sound. So you can refer to anything only by the name of Krishna. Or in another words, what Mahaprabhu talked when he was a Sanskrit scholar but already converted, he will teach every single word is first the name of Krishna and then something else. Every Sanskrit word in the alphabet, he will say, first refers to Krishna, then refers to whatever you like. But every sound first is pointing in that direction. So, in other words, if you go to that sound, you can point to every single other thing if you want. So that was a very interesting dynamics there. Everyone was saying Krishna, Krishna, but everyone understand what actually each one was meaning. Of course, first they were meaning Krishna, Krishna. And in a secondary layer, bring me more water, bring a bucket, clean that floor. But first of all, Krishna, Krishna. No? Like implying, if you are engaged in cleaning your heart, the first idea you have to be reminded is Krishna, Krishna. Why am I cleaning my heart? Krishna, Krishna. I need to bring an extra inner broom to clean this section. For what? Krishna, Krishna. No? I have to keep in mind what's the purpose of all this engagement. So Mahaprabhu will go also and besides giving the perfect example, will go and inspect how everyone else was doing their particular task. So when someone was doing that very nicely, Mahaprabhu will like praise that devotee and give support and share that. But when he's someone who was doing something not in the best possible way, Mahaprabhu will chastise the person in a loving way. Please do not relate the word chastisement with something negative or traumatic. But just, and again, this is the parallel between guru and disciple. Disciple is expected to do his, her homework in working with his, her own heart. And the guru will have to create some, and the Guru Maharaj will say, teachable moment. But if the student is not taking advantage of that, guru has the, hopefully the disciple is giving the guru permission to tell me whenever I'm doing it wrong, because I want to do it right. I mean, it's like, it should be like without thinking that if I'm going to learn, I don't know, piano from a teacher, it goes without saying that whenever I'm mistaken, the teacher will tell me. Oh. You shouldn't even clarify. Teacher, if I'm mistaken, please correct me. And he'll say, of course, that's the only thing I will be doing for a few years, probably. No, so it goes without saying. If you say, do not tell me when I'm mistaken, the teacher will say, class is over and you don't return here, please, because you will never learn anything. So, so in the same way, part of the duty of the teacher is to correct the disciple. And even he shouldn't ask for permission for that, because having a teacher implies, I need that. I don't have a clue what's better or not. So Mahaprabhu will correct what someone was not doing their best. In another word, in connection to anartha nibriti, we could say that the student is engaged in anartha nibriti, but sometimes one may fall into some complacency corner for a moment and enter into a denial of growing more. I read recently one quote which was interesting, which is basically means like sin happens when we refuse to grow. That's the main capital sin. Because sometimes we think we have this idea of sin or evil more connected with they call sometimes the hot sins, no? Like this anger and lust and greed. But many times it has more to do with complacency, superficiality, hypocrisy, blindness to acknowledge what is in your face. That's way more delicate. So in regards to anartha nibriti, again, it can happen in that direction. Not so much the anartha is taking over, but you are not doing all that you can to continue growing. As we say one time, that's a form of sahajism. One form of sahajism is, I want to rush into a level that is too high for my present situation. But an inverted form of sahajism is, I don't want to grow to a level that I'm already called for. And I want to remain in a comfort zone that should no longer belong to me, basically. So that's very important. To test ourselves, to examine ourselves, to allow others to examine ourselves. Like Jiva Goswami mentions in the Bhakti Sandarbha, he quotes one verse from the Brahma Vaibharta Purana. He speaks about different types of guru. And when he speaks about one type of guru who is not the ideal one, he says that guru does not conduct any type of examination. So we would think, well, what's the purpose? What's the meaning of that? So of course, one meaning can be the guru is not examining the disciples or testing the disciples or correcting the disciples. But also on one level is the guru. And with guru, we can apply that to ourselves, although we are not guru. But the point is, the guru is not examining himself, for example. How much what I'm teaching others, I'm doing that. How much of what I'm telling others to do, I'm doing my best to do that myself first, as Mahaprabhu is showing here. Because that can happen. You may get accustomed to telling others what to do. This is a hot seat, just in case. It sounds pretty fancy, but there is a price to that. No, I'm not telling you what to do in one sense, but in one sense, yes. But of course, Krishna is hearing all that and saying, "Oh, you say all those nice things to others, Padmanabha. Let's see how much you yourself believe those words." So after I get down from this hot seat, I enter into the real hot seat, which means how do I walk my talk? And the tests will come. And not always you will pass the test sometimes. You just sometimes will realize speaking too much can be a distraction. What's too much, you have to see how much of a distraction that is. Because if that distracts you from making your own practice a priority, that's a distraction for sure. If the priority is telling others what to do, then you are being distracted of telling yourself what to do. So you should create some formula that, okay, I'm telling 10% of my day people what to do, and 90% of my day being reassuring that I'm doing what I tell others what to do, or something in that level. Not even 50 and 50, because that's not so sustainable. So this is important also, no? Like to examine ourselves, what we think, what we tell, what goes outside of our mouth, and how much that is reverberating. You have that word?
Resonating.
Yeah. Inside of us, resonating inside of us. Mm-hmm. Because if we don't have a very high standard, very high rigor of this, we may lose so much in our representation even of bhakti. We can be experts in telling others what to do, but not experts in pursuing the realization that comes after doing what we are telling others what to do. You follow? I may tell you this, but how much I am applying myself in the practice to get anubhav. So anubhav should be priority. Anubhav means experience, direct realization, direct experience of what one speaks about. So again, Mahaprabhu will see some of them neglecting their principle of anartha nibriti, becoming somewhat complacent, so he will lovingly intervene and chastise them. And then Mahaprabhu, just we are concluding here, he's sitting all his disciples on one row, on another row, and all these different piles were there, each one different size. Again, Mahaprabhu's pile was bigger than anyone else. And he say, let's see who was the one who has collected the least or the less?
The least.
And the one who had done that will receive chastisement. Again, another chastisement. That person will have to pay
a fine,
thank you, of like some cakes and sweet rice for the Vaishnavs. So that's a chastisement, no? Vaishnav Seva. So that's again an important point. His chastisement, those who were not so expert, not so skilled in anartha nibriti, he chastised them with Vaishnava Seva. Like implying, you go to the Vaishnava and serve the Vaishnava and take further shelter in the sadhu and align yourself with discipline under the shelter of that person so you become more skilled in this art. So again, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami at this point, just concluding, will say, the minds of everyone were as clean as the temple. So creating this symbolic parallel, external cleansing, internal cleansing, as Mahaprabhu himself said again, the very beginning of Shikshastakam, the very first words of the Shikshastakam, his final instructions were, Chetudarpana Marjanam. So now there's a parallel, Gundicha Marjan Lila, Marjanam. The word Marjanam is there. Marjanam is cleansing. So Chetta Darpana Marjanam, as I like to put it, Chetta means Chitta, and Chitta in modern terms could be translated as the subconscious, where all these samskaras are stored and from a background layer, subconscious layer, are moving us here and there. So Chetta Darpana Marjanam basically means embrace your subconscious in contemporary terms. Because you say clean the mirror of the heart, it sounds like romantic, but what's does it mean? Embrace your subconscious. And you say like, oh, okay. I'm not so... Sometimes we are not so willing to visit the subconscious. Because it's like the... How do you say in English? This room in the house that you put all the... Outside the house, you have a little room where all this stuff is put there.
Like storage room or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, there was another word, because in the U.S. they were different words. But it's that room that whenever you don't know where to put something, you will put it there.
Bodega.
Yeah, basically that's bodega. For those who speak Spanish, or if that's used here, bodega. In Madhuban, that's a word, no? Bodega. That's in Spanish. No? So whenever you don't want to see anywhere, throw in the bodega. Bodega, bodega. But at some point, the bodega starts to have a life of its own. You have put so many stuff, and nobody had looked there for years. They throw this out of the window. That sometimes you will start to hear voices from the bodega, some hands coming from the window of the bodega. And you say, I won't enter there. But the bodega is full. You cannot put, let's open another bodega then. And you have another, a whole community of these voices and arms, and you're like, I don't want to go there. So that's kind of to be a little graphical. Embrace your subconscious. Open the bodega. Clean the bodega. No problem. You open and the monster is no longer there. It doesn't sound too glorious, but that's the first glory of Srinam that Mahaprabhu is mentioning. That first verse, there are seven glories of the Nam. The first is, clean the bodega. I said, like, oh, it doesn't sound so glorious. Mahaprabhu said, that's glorious. Remember, I garlanded you, I put this chandan. You will be protected by me. Enter the bodega. You are backed, supported by Mahaprabhu and his Gaur Bhaktavinda. So in this way, this Gundicha represents, again, Vrindavan. So Gundicha Marjan Lila, this pastime of the cleansing of Gundicha, means let's clean our heart more and more. So Bhagavan eventually feels called, invited, tempted, irresistibly. Feels all attracted to go in that direction, and he decides to sit there forever. Paramatma will be very respectfully kicked out, and our istade will be fully enthroned there. So that's basically what we are celebrating today, Gundicha Marjan Lila, and just few words to connect with tomorrow's celebration. And we will stop there, because Chaitanya Charitamrita describes after this Gundicha Marjan Lila came one celebration called Netrotsava, which is also happening today. Netrotsava means like a festival for the netra, for the eyes, which is means that Jagannath is giving darshan again after being 2 weeks sick after the Snan Yatra, when he is bathed, and it is said that he catches a cold. So he has to go into his inner rooms. He's not given darshan for 2 weeks. And the whole 56 times of eating changes. And they start to serve him herbal teas and things like this because he's sick for 2 weeks. That's the diet, interestingly. So then next day, like a day like today, he's given darshan again. So that's Netrotsava, a festival for the eyes to have darshan of him. And it is said that tomorrow, Rath Yatra, I mean, Jagannath has a pretty very powerful digestive fire, because for 2 weeks he was taking just herbal teas. Today is normal standard of preparations, but tomorrow Rath Yatra they will cook double as usual. So he in 2 days is ready to eat hundreds of times per day after being just herbal tea for 2 weeks. So only the Supreme can do. That's why Krishna said, I'm the fire of digestion. No? We could connect with that. So in this way, Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami concludes his narration, saying that whoever, even if a topmost sinner, he's about this Gundicha Marjan Lila, that person will be able to obtain devotion for Krishna Bhakti. So that's our hope, and that's why we are actually speaking about this, with that particular focus in mind. And in this way, preparing ourselves, our consciousness, and our hearts for tomorrow, Rath Yatra, because again, if you want Rath Yatra to actually happen, first you have to do Gundicha Marjanam. No? If there is no Gundicha Marjanam, there is no Rath Yatra, as much as you can. You have to go through all that Gundicha Marjan Lila implies, and the real celebration of Rath Yatra will take place. So in this way, all this is actually a preliminary preparation for tomorrow. To see you tomorrow in our Archipelago Rath Yatra will be somewhat aquatic version of it. So see you in Sri Chaitanya Dham. And we will be speaking about that tomorrow in the same time. So before finishing, I don't know if there are any questions and commentaries, something you may like to say? Oh, Bhaktiras is clarifying the word I was looking was shed. The bodega? Shed in English?
Shed.
Yeah. She knows because I've repeated that in North Carolina so many times.
I just wanted to comment that we celebrated Gundicha Marjana here in Sharbuj Temple today. Sarigrahi was vacuuming. Haricharan was polishing the puja things.
Omkar was cleaning the books here.
Yes, Omkar was cleaning the books.
Okay. Someone has to do that function as well.
Yeah. And she prepared for Sharan.
Yeah. And Shamananda cleaned in the kitchen, and Nora has also vacuumed.
Yeah. And you, Bhrigupad, also I saw you cleaning the doors and some other sections.
Yeah. So we tried to kind of enter into the spirit like this.
For sure. Thanks so much for preparing the ground to that. Hope you did the same over there in your respective places. So, something else before finishing? Omkar?
Maharaj, I was wondering, when you mentioned you read the Leela yesterday.
You read the Leela yesterday?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Or today.
Today in the morning.
Yeah, this morning. But I don't remember you as reading what you mentioned about each one had a pile, and whose pile was the smallest. He was chastised.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's not really like a chastisement, isn't it a nice... I mean, it's counterintuitive to be rewarded something that we are supposed to be aspiring for as the highest.
I didn't get the last part.
Like, we're aspiring for Seva, and that's supposed to be the highest thing. So to be able to serve Vaishnavas is supposed to be a reward and not a chastisement instead. So can we see that as Mahaprabhu's compassion?
Yeah, that's Mahaprabhu's chastisement, basically. I mean, when he chastises, he keeps giving mercy. That's the way he's doing it. And that's how we should see that everything, everywhere. You know? Like if that's coming from higher quarters, Srila Prabhupada would say, and there's one saying that he says, Tat Bartsanahai Kripada Lakshan. Yeah. Tada Bartsanahai Kripada Lakshan. Chastisement is a sign of mercy. So, of course, again, if it comes from not just to justify abuse or anything like that, but if a real well-wisher, guardian, Bhagavan, Guru, Sadhu, they're chastising us, it's coming from a place of unconditional love and causeless grace. So it's a way of saying chastisement. It's on top of chastisement, it's mercy. But it may take the form of chastisement or correction, if you want to put it like that. Because again, we may attach some meaning to each word according to our experience outside of the realm of unconditional love, and chastisement is not like it's just for the sake of making others suffering. But even ideally in this world, I don't know, if a parent chastises the children, ideally should be trying to help the person. It's not just for the sake of making the person suffering. If you speak about karma, you want to see that as chastisement. Hopefully not. You will see that divine justice, educational law. So, and that's karma. We are not speaking about causeless mercy here. But even karma there is some educational purpose. So if we speak about Mahaprabhu, Nityananda Prabhu, and so on, if it takes the form of chastisement, you see all the sections when, Nityananda is kicking Shivananda Sen or things like this, and oh, that's overt chastisement. But Shivananda Sen is like dancing like nothing, not celebrating that. So Prabhupada will say, if the guru is caressing the disciple or slapping the disciple, in both cases he's giving mercy. Again, externally we may say, oh, chastisement, oh, mercy. No, mercy, mercy. And this is greater mercy, he will say. Not because we are masochists or anything, but he will say, you only chastise someone that you have some intimate connection with. Mm. You are not chastising everywhere in the street, or hopefully. On a normal case, you will only chastise someone that you really are close. So the chastisement will come as a sign of trust and intimacy. Mm. So Srila Siddha Maharaj once will say that. Srila Prabhupada himself once, also Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta chastised Srila Prabhupada publicly once. Srila Prabhupada felt so much love by his Gurudev. He's so concerned about me. He takes that he's chastising me in front of everyone. So I could relate to that. Interestingly. That's a good way of seeing this situation. Because you can take the other stand. Why he's saying that to me in front of all of them? Couldn't he say that just publicly, privately? No, he's so concerned about me that he wants everyone else to be aware of my issues. So I'm not only protected by him, but by so many others or something. And Srila Maharaj will say something similar. Oh, Gurudev chastised me. Oh, it seems that he considers myself his property. I'm saved. He concluded. Because again, you won't chastise everyone and everyone. You only chastise someone that you are close to. So if Gurudev is chastising me, he considers me close to him, his property. If he considers me his property, I'm saved. So he ended up celebrating that. So in this case, we could say the same. Mahaprabhu is chastising, quote unquote, but the form that it takes is serve the Vaishnavas. So, like pointing, whatever chastisement comes from the higher regions, that should take the form of increasing our disposition for Vaishnava Seva, basically. Because it's coming from there. It's coming from someone with a disposition for Vaishnava Seva. So it should come to us inviting to increase our disposition for Vaishnava Seva. In that case, both sides properly understood what's going on. So yes, strictly speaking, in one sense, there's no chastisement in the sense of that's mercy. So again, in the beginning, we see these two words as opposite, but in the absolute plane, there's no difference. Something else? Okay, we can conclude here. Maybe we can do some 5-10 minutes bhajan, to some maha mantra to conclude, and then we honor prasad. Continue sharing. So, Srila Gurudev ki jai, Sriman Mahaprabhu ki jai, Sri Harinam Sankirtan ki jai, Sri Sadbhuj Mahaprabhu ki jai, Sri Gundicha Marjan Lila ki jai, Sri Ratri Yatra ki jai, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Gaur Premanand.